You know, we have been discussing interacting photon gaps. And there's one last point I want to make before we go into the Rotor model on lattice. So let me remind you that using the field theory, we find the energy of a photon gas has this particular form. Here we assume the field is constant. So basically that means that if mu is negative, this energy is minimized by some kind of non-zero. So we are in the symmetry breaking phase. If u is a positive, this diagram is positive, then this energy is minimized by a zero phi. So that's a symmetric phase. And this phase actually is a phase with no boson, because photon energy is zero. Okay, so here I want to look into this phase transition more carefully. So we have been shown that in this signature breaking phase, the incoming boson gas behaves like a superfluid. So we have a boson in the system, so it can flow. Okay, and so means that if we add a force to the boson, the system would respond and the boson would flow. That's a superfluid phase. But in the symmetric phase, actually there is no boson in the system in the quantum phase, because phi equals zero. Means if you add a force to the boson, nothing is going to happen. So in a sense, we can say this is an insulating phase. You know, with the boson adding force, the system responds, give you a current, that's a conduction phase. And then that's an insulating phase. So in some sense, you can view this phase transition from positive and negative U. It's a superfluid to insulator transition. So this is an insulating phase. OK. And no, because there's no boson here. There's no boson, so nothing happens. But on the hand, theoretically, you know, U is a parameter in a system. If you change this U, the system would have a different behavior. Here, I just want to say, for positive U, the system behaves like insulator. For negative U, the system behaves like superfluid. Yes, sir. And then this, so of course we can see that what we're describing is a quantum phase transition. We discuss zero temperature property of the system. We're not changing temperature, which we fix temperature to be zero. We're changing a parameter in the theory. Here is U. And this transition is called a quantum phase transition, which has a zero temperature. And so the point I try to make is that what excitation looks like before, after, and right at phase transition. We discuss the excitation in a symmetry breaking phase. And we emphasize that at a low energy, we get a linear differential relation. Okay. And however, for the symmetric phase, the excitation is very easy to obtain. We didn't discuss it. Because for the symmetric phase, the excitation again is obtained by studying a wave in this nonlinear wave equation. But in a symmetric phase, we expand around the phi equal to zero. So therefore, we can simply drop this nonlinear term. We get a linear differential equation. Okay, that's what we do. In a symmetry breaking phase, we have to expand around a non-zero phi and only keep the linear term. But in a symmetric phase, this such expansion is very easy because we expand around the zero, then we just drop this term. When we drop this term, we find we get a very simple wave equation, and dispersion relation is determined by this term. We replace partial x by ik, we have obtained this digital pair relation. Oh, sorry, there's no square root. So this is the two dispersion relation we get in the two different phases. But in this case, the dispersion relation looks like this. Just quadratic with a gap. It's u. And this is just like the dispersion relation of the original boson. Then at the transition, this U go to zero, we get a quadratic dispersion relation right at the transition. Okay. So here I want to make a comment that this is kind of a general feature. You know, usually the number of low line excision right at the transition is more than those before and after transition. In this case, before the transition, we have a gap, so we don't even have a low line excision. And after phase transition, we have a gapless excision, but now dispersion relation is linear, so there's less of them at a low energy. The after transition point, we get a quadratic dispersion relation, so we have a more of the low line excision. And this is a generic feature of this continuous quantum phase transition. You know, for the quantum phase transition, you have phase A, phase B, and both may or may not have some kind of gapless excision. But at transition point, you usually have a more, maybe always have a more gapless excision than phase A and phase B. So this is example. And we will see this feature in the quantum rotor model. Okay, so this basically conclude our discussion of the interacting boson gas. So now let's study a rotor model. Okay. And the motivation to study rotor model actually is in the say in this ultra-cold atom gas. So let me describe this background a little bit. And so in this ultra-cold atomic gas, people cool the atomic gas to very low temperature, like microkelvin. And so therefore, those atoms, if they are bosons, they really realize this interacting boson gas very nicely. At a low temperature, they can have boson condensation. You see all this behavior. But then people make some modification to the system. They shine a two beam of a laser. So this 2D beam laser interfere and form some kind of standing waves in the region. Okay. And these atoms actually can interact with the electric field in the laser beam. Depends on situation. For say in one case, the atom want to stay in a place where the electric field equal to zero, for example. And so therefore, this laser beam effectively form a periodic potential for those atoms. And the atom want to stay here and here, etc. Okay. And you can tune the strength of a laser. Then you tune the height of the potential. So this artificial periodic potential, we can have a boson gas in this artificial periodic potential whose strength can be tuned continuously. Okay. So then this is so then we are on study the physics of such a system. If a potential is very, very weak or maybe zero, what we have? We get the boson superfluid described by this. Okay, so now let's imagine we tune the potential stronger and stronger and stronger. Okay, and so for example, like what I draw here, if a boson density is such that there's a 3 boson per unit cell, and then potential gets very, very strong, then we get a situation where where on each potential well, we have this, we have a 3 boson exactly. And by moving one boson from one well to another well, we may cause interaction energy between bosons. Because bosons do have interaction between each other. So by removing that, by doing this, by making this change, we cause some kind of interaction energy. Okay. So this really suggests the following. Maybe the ground state is such a state where we have exactly three bosons per unit cell. There's no fluctuation. And the excitation corresponds to moving the boson from one well to another well, which causes some energy, say like V. Okay. So then the picture is that the ground state, we have the ground state. Then the such excitation would cause energy of order V. And then you can move to may have some other excitation. So basically I try to say that when the potential well is very strong, seemingly we should have a situation that the ground state is gapped. We lost the gapless excitation. That's a picture. In a very weak potential case, we get a superfluid, we get this density fluctuation, density wave, we should have gapless mode, which is called Gaussian mode. But then using this physical picture, we try to see that if well potential is very, very strong, then the boson localized each potential well, and somehow excitation should be gapped. And this suggests a phase transition, a quantum phase transition again, by tuning the strength of a well. And so this quantum phase transition will change the superfluid to an insulator, because here the boson ground state is boson exactly as three boson per unit cell. It's hard for boson to make any change. So this may be an insulator. Yes.
Why don't we expect that those oscillation modes in the ground state to excite excitation?
Yeah. So indeed the boson can also oscillate inside each well, and so that's also a final energy gap. Here may not be V, so maybe bigger than V, maybe smaller than V, depend on other things. Okay. So basically, I try to say that in a strong potential limit, somehow there's a way to destroy those gapless excitation. When you destroy the gapless excitation, the very nature of ground state changes. That's a phase transition, and then we should get a insulating state, because if every excitation have a gap, then we apply a weak perturbation, nothing can change. So it's insulated. Okay. So this is a mod of superfluid to mod insulator transition. And which is in some sense similar to this. And but we want to understand better, you know, what's going on here. And in particular, we want to understand before and after transition, or maybe right at transition, what a dispersion relation looks like this. Looks like some other things. So this is a story I'm going to describe. Okay. So to describe this physics, we'll start with something things unrelated. We'll start with a rotor model, and later we'll connect the rotor model to this interacting boson gas we just described here. Okay. So what is a rotor? So let's start with something. So the rotor is basically just a particle moving on a circle. So maybe let me put the particle here. So therefore, the position particle is given by the theta, which is a function of t. So particle moving on a circle, that's a rotor. Okay. So what is a Hamiltonian? The Hamiltonian for rotor is simply equal to J, or we call it JZ, LZ squared, say minus G cosine theta. So let's say kind of some Hamiltonian like this. So actually, J is just another name for the moment inertia. You know, usually we write this as a one half of LZ divided by the moment of ignition. So LZ is the angular momentum. But instead of writing 1/2 times 1 over I, so we just write J here. And this G cosine theta term gets some potential, some like a gravity, you know. The rotor here have a lower energy than the rotor here, just some potential energy for the rotor. Okay, so that is a rotor model. So this classical rotor model. So, yes? You can remove, if you don't like it, remove that. But just you could have that term, you know. And but later we'll see why these kind of terms are important in describing boson gas. Somehow they are related. Yes.
I mean, we can just think of it as a constant force.
Yeah, this is a constant force. So this term representing so let me do this way. Suppose if this is theta, so this term almost like this gravity, gravitational energy. It has a vertical circle. Okay. And what is the quantum model? The quantum model is a JZ. We just put in a hat everywhere, get a quantum model. Yeah. So that's a quantum model. Okay. But for the quantum model, I'd rather write it differently. We'll write this as this LZ square minus G 1/2 L plus plus L minus. You can write this way. Okay. So so what is the LZ actually? In a theta basis, LZ is a minus I partial theta. So it's an angular momentum. And then this L plus minus is simply e to the I plus minus theta. Okay. Using this notation is really using this angular momentum rating and lowering operator, actually. The L plus, when you apply to a state, increase angular momentum by 1. And L minus, when you act on a state, decrease angular momentum by 1. So this is L plus L minus, actually, is a raising and lowering operator of angular momentum. And the sum of the two actually give you cosine theta. So basically, that is a rotor model. Okay. So this is a quantum model for the single rotor. And but what is really interesting is a system of rotor. We have a system of rotor which form a lattice. For example, in one dimension, we can describe so let's consider the following rotor model. Rotor lattice in two dimensions, which is a JZ sum over I LZI square. Okay. So in this rotor model, what we have? We have a two-dimensional lattice. On our side, we have a rotor. So this I gets labeled this vertex. And then this LIZ basically is a rotor at this particular vertex. Okay. And then, you know, if you only have this term, each rotor do not interact with each other, just independent rotor. So that's kind of boring system. And here we want to say that there is some kind of a spring between those particles. They try to correlate their angles. So therefore, we can consider a coupling like sum of IJ. IJA maybe just representing nearest neighbors. Then you have this cosine theta I minus theta j. So those are, if you put a hat, this will be the some kind of interacting rotor model. Okay, and so basically the first term is like kinetic energy. If a rotor is spinning very fast, then this one, they cost some energy here. The second term is like a potential interaction between rotors. And the second term prefer every rotor have the same angle. So if this rotor try to spin, then the next rotor also pushed by the first rotor, etc. So those terms representing an interaction which try to make an angle for rotor to be all the same. So this is the kind of rotor model. And using this raising and lowering operator, we can rewrite the second term as the following. So this means the sum over all nearest neighbors. And maybe with the so let's call this J X Y. Then rename that just L I plus L J minus plus the complex conjugate. Because of this combination is basically e to the I minus theta j. When you add the complex conjugate, that's how you get cosine. Okay. So that's it. So this is a rotor model. And so we are going to study the physical behavior of this rotor model. But how these rotor models are related to the Boson model in the optical lattice, you know, how that was related. Okay. So one thing we noticed that so this term for the rotor model, LZ is quantized. So LZ, I didn't have this eigenstate where the eigenvalue is m, is an integer. Okay. So we can using this eigenstate of LZ to look at this rotor model. Okay. Then what is the first term? The first term will act on this eigenstates. This term gave us something like JZ times M squared. So what? Well, actually, this term can be interpreted using the Boson language. We can interpret M as the number for Boson on that particular size minus some kind of average number. And then this term would behave like JZ n minus n0 squared. Expanding that gave us jz n squared minus 2 times jz n0 times n plus a constant term, jz n0 squared. Okay, so what? Well, when you look at this, how the energy depend on the Boson number? We have this square term. The square term like interaction. You know, when Boson have interactions, their energy depend on the Boson number square. Because that's like this rho square term, you know. The rho square term, the Boson density square times times some constant. So those are really representing interaction between bosons. So on the lattice, this density became number boson per site. So then just this term really representing the interaction. So Jz here representing the strength of interaction. The bigger the Jz, the stronger the repulsive interaction between the boson. If Jz is negative, then we have a track interaction between bosons. Okay. Then what is the next term? Next term, a linear in N. The linear in N term actually was interpreted as a chemical potential, mu times N. So we have this chemical potential term, which is coupled linearly to N. Certainly, if a chemical potential equal to zero, the ground state would have no boson because N equal to zero would minimize energy. But here, we are consider a situation the chemical potential not equal to zero, and the ground state is minimized to have N zero bosons. So N zero is minimize the energy. So, but to have a minimum energy at a non-zero boson value is due to non-zero chemical potential. Okay, so therefore we can interpret this energy, this term, this rotor angular momentum term, as a boson interaction energy plus energy of a chemical potential. The combination of two can give us this term. That's it. Okay. So this already have some kind of looks like we have this boson trapped inside this this periodic potential. In this picture, N zero equal to three, so three minimize energy. And when you add one boson, remove one boson, energy would increase because that would change this away from three. Yes.
If
you know the chemical potential changes when you change add the particle to the surface, and the ground state number of particles at the same time, why do we need the ground state to have boundary measure chemical? Yeah, so here we're using this language, so-called Granata canonical ensemble. Typically, when we describe boson system, we say we have a system of N bosons, so N is fixed. So that language is a canonical ensemble. But when describing this, I use a different language. I say, I have a system with a certain chemical potential. I don't know how many bosons exist, but I know that chemical potential. We will obtain number of bosons in the system by minimizing the energy. It's really just like this. You can see, I don't, suppose we have an energy like this. Some N squared term, some linear N term. I don't know what is N. But I do know what is the interaction, what is the chemical potential. We don't know these two coefficients. And a second coefficient like chemical potential. And once you have a chemical potential, you minimize the energy, then you find N. So therefore, we do not directly control how many bosons in the system. We have a knob in terms of chemical potential. If you want to have more bosons in the system, we increase chemical potential. I have less boson, we decrease chemical potential. So we control boson number indirectly through this chemical potential. And this is more convenient because then we can consider an unconstrained system where the boson number can fluctuate. It can have any boson number. We don't have to worry about a fixed boson number. It's more convenient. Yeah. Okay. So therefore, the first term already described how boson interact in each potential well, and also describe the effect of chemical potential. That's the very first term. Then you may ask, why I need this term? That's your question. Why I need this cosine theta term? Okay. Then let's look at what this term do. When you apply this term to a state, you can see this one decrease n by 1, and this increase n by 1. And here we interpret m as a number of bosons on the site. So therefore, this term representing a hopping. They remove one boson from j site and add that boson to the I site. So the hopping from j to I site. And this complex conjugate representing, if you write this down, the complex conjugate is I minus and J plus, representing hopping from I side to J side. So therefore, this term actually representing describing a tunneling of boson from one potential well to another potential well. And then in the limit where this potential well is very deep, the tunneling is very weak, so Jxy is very small. If this potential well is very shallow, then tunneling is strong, so Jxy is large. Okay, so that's it. So to describe a boson in the periodic potential is very, very complicated, and we don't know how to do that. But this represents typical thing in condensed matter physics. Then we think some models, which are much easier, that capture the main essence of the realistic situation. So realistic situation, the main essence is that we have implied in the potential so that which you want to keep the boson in each potential well to equal to some number like a 3. Then another essence in the realistic situation is that the boson are not totally localized. Through tunneling, they can move around. So this rotor model happened to be the model which captured this essence. Okay. So, but then I want to say the following. If you fix interaction between bosons, then this Jz is fixed. In this expansion, we notice that the n0 has to be integer. So in some sense, this potential is quantized. It's not changed continuously. So what I really try to say is following is that this model actually is not very generic. The potential has this very special term. It's related to the interaction of a boson through some integer number. This is not totally generic. So we indeed, in the real situation, we can tune the potential continuously. So what that means? That means to describe the situation where we have a continuous tuning potential, we need to add directly a linear term. So this is, I add this linear term plus J nu sum over I just LCI. So this nu is not this nu. This is too nu, but they are different by some constant like this. By adding this new term, then so this is what we interpret the potential. We can tune the potential continuously. Okay. So at the end, this is our model. Yeah. So describing this this simple model describes how boson hop in this optical lattice. Okay. So the tuning parameter is following. We can tune the potential to see how many boson in the system. Okay. And we can tune the laser strength to tune this Jxy. Okay. The interaction between the boson cannot be tuned very easily, so this one is fixed, but that's okay. Because that determines the total energy scale. And we can tune nu and the Jxy in the experiment. And so therefore we can study the behavior of the phase diagram of the system. And knowing that the nu and the Jxy are two tuning parameters, we can tune them. And we can study whether there's phase transition, etc. Okay, so any question here? Oh, it's not taking energy. This is a, that's a very good question. This Jxy is not the, it is energy, it has dimensional energy, so it can be real energy. But here I want to interpret Jxy as a hopping amplitude. So how likely this force can hop from this side to that side?
This side is so he's switching with another one, right? There's another one coming the other
direction. No, no.
Because you wrote complex conjugate.
That's two terms. Okay. The person you describe is you know, if I to J hopping and J to I hopping happen together, we are describing this operator with the four L's. The picture you describe actually describes the effect of this operator with 4L. So that is a J to I to J hopping and a J to I hopping happen together. Okay. That's a swapping. A swapping describes this operator. And this operator only describes only hopping one direction.
Okay.
And but somewhere else, this can also happen, but not at the same time.
Is there a simple relation to the XY model?
Yeah, it is the XY model.
Okay.
And so that's in the spin language. So since you raised it, so this model also connects to the XY model in the following sense. We can make some truncation. Like, so M here is the integer. Let's truncate that. We say M only has three values, plus one, minus one, zero. If M can only take these three values, plus one, M, minus one, zero, we can consider this Hamiltonian, this subspace. In that subspace, this operator became a spin one operator, that's a SV. And then this is a SXXX coupling. So this is really the XY model in a spin language. So, So therefore, in some magnetic material, it also describes this model. Because the cold up gas is very cool, so using another example. Maybe 10 years earlier, I will introduce these models in some magnetic material. some magnets would be described this kind of a model. And in that language, this new term actually is the external magnetic field. So we can tune the external magnetic field. But in the material, usually is that these two couplings are fixed. We cannot tune that. This one is easy to tune. But however, in the after cold atom gas, we can tune two parameters. So that's the difference. Okay. So let's we have the model. So now let's so the next question is what are we going to do with this model? So what is the issue I want to address? Usually there's many, many issues, but as a way of thinking, we consider a very simple issue. What is a ground state? What is a phase transition? So let's consider the phase diagram of this model. And how should they consider phase diagram? In principle, it's very simple. You just diagonalize the Hamiltonian, find the ground energy, and changing mu and the jxy to see where this ground energy have singularities. Whenever ground energy have singularities, then you get a phase transition. And then from there, you can study, before after phase transition, what is the lower energy excitation? Right at phase transition, what is lower energy excitation? So we can study all kind of things like that. But we are facing similar difficulties. We don't know how to diagonalize this. This is very complicated. So I had to make some kind of approximation. But as a guide, let's consider the following situation. Let's consider exact soluble limit. You know, usually this Hamiltonian is hard to diagonalize. But in certain limit, this Hamiltonian can be diagonalized exactly. So let's consider that limit. So the limit we are going to consider is this jxy equals zero limit. When jxy equals zero limit, this Hamiltonian can be diagnosed easily. Why? Let me say the mathematical. You know, it's obvious for people who know it's obvious they can diagnose, but let me make a mathematical statement. When jxy equals zero, this Hamiltonian became a sum of commuting terms. In this model, they are obviously commuting. But in some other model, they are not obviously commuting, but they are commuting. So once the Hamiltonian can be written as a sum of the commuting operators, if OI commutes with OJ for any I and J, then this Hamiltonian can be diagonalized. Very simple. because then you can, using this common eigenstates of those O operators, to diagonalize Hamiltonian. And if you GX equal to zero, and then the common eigenstate of this operator will be the M state, this LZ eigenstate. So therefore, the Gronsky energy, so therefore the eigenstate is simply is MI. So this representing a configuration that at the I side, the LZ eigenvalue is MI. There's some pattern. Okay. And the energy for such states is simply equal to JZ MZ, so M square, MI square minus mu MI, which is can be rewritten as JZ sum over I MI minus mu over 2 JZ square minus mu square over 4 JZ square. Okay. The second form is more convenient. The second form is more convenient. And so from the second form, you know, this is just a constant. Okay. It do not depend on the configuration. So MI only contains here. In this expression, it's obvious that to minimize energy, we need to choose MI to be as close to nu over 2 JZ as possible. Okay. Because MI is integer, this ratio may not be integer. So this combination may not be zero. But the ground state is simply given by this all the MI equal to the integer part of 1/2 plus mu over 2 JZ. Okay. So maybe I should call this the floor of this. The largest integer, which is smaller than this number. Maybe that's a better way. So when MI equal to that, then this then the energy will be lower. Will be minimal energy. So that's very simple. So therefore, we can plug this into here. We find the energy, the total Gronsky energy. Gronsky energy is a number of site times JZ. The floor is 1/2 plus mu over 2 JZ. Minus mu over 2 JZ square minus mu square. Okay. So basically this number gave us a clue that this Gronsky energy is not an analytic function of mu and JZ. Whenever this sum became an integer, there will be a singularity, there will be a phase transition. So if you plot Gronsky energy as a function of mu, the Gronsky energy looks like this. I think there's a minus sign here. Let me try to see. No, there's no. So, yeah, the minus sign is here. Yeah. So the Gronsky energy looks like this. It's a zero at the beginning, then there's a. So this is in the mu over JZ. And so this is the Gronsky energy. Yes.
Those first two lines at the top, is there something weird with your occasion? I think at the first
when you have for a bracket.
This one?
I think the line on top, there's something wrong with your brackets.
Okay, well, what's on?
The JZ doesn't seem to match with the next line. The terms don't.
No, maybe there's no square.
I think the graph is meant to be right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. That's
yeah, there's no square. Yeah. Yeah, basically, if you don't squarely, you get the m square is here, the cross term is here, the new square term is cancelled by this term.
But the thing that the cross term doesn't give you.
The cross term gave you.
There's no j, right?
No, this cancelled, this is jz.
But there's a
jz
the at the top.
Oh, yeah. This is wrong. The bracket is here. Sorry. Yeah, it's really from here. The new term gets directly capital. There's no JZ in the new term. Sorry for that. Okay, so why I do this? First, I try to demonstrate this principle. To understand the phase transition is not very hard. You have to find the Gwangsan energy and find where you have singularities. And the second one, so using this, we would say we'll have phase transition. Okay. And so when mu over jz equal to say 1 or 3, etc., there will be a phase transition. Okay, so we got this phase diagram. And what kind of phase transition it is? It is a first order phase transition because the derivative of energy is discontinuous. It's quite different from the phase transition we studied before for the impression boson. Near the second order derivative is discontinuous. That's the second order phase transition. This looks like a first order phase transition. Okay. But through this example, I also want to demonstrate that using exact solute model to study phase and phase transition sometimes can be dangerous. You may get wrong results. And this example, that the picture coming from this exact model is not quite correct. Okay. So to understand what's going wrong, so let's study the excitation. Okay. So let's plot this. Let's plot this mu over jz, and then this is a excitation energy. Let's plot excitation. Yes.
Why do you consider the example
the
way you made the assumption that
jxy
is 0?
Yeah, here jxy equals 0. So far we have considered jxy. So when gx equals 0, the model can be solved exactly, so easy to study. And we get some physical picture from that limit. And then we want to ask the following question. Whether the physical picture obtained from gx equals 0 limit is generic or not? Is that typical or not? If they represent a typical situation, then we are happy. Then we can study a typical situation or typical phase transition in this exact model. That'd be really nice. But usually we are not that lucky. And so the issue is the following. In the real situation, the GX are not equal to 0. Maybe small, for example. But do you still have a first order phase transition? Well, this picture from GX equal to 0 survives this small perturbation, making GX are not equal to 0. So that is the issue. And so again, this is kind of a philosophy in condensed matter approach. You know, when you're facing with some model which you don't know how to diagonalize, what do you do? Okay, so there are many ways to do it. So one way to do, let's consider soluble limit. So what I'm doing here, we can do soluble limit. In the soluble limit, yeah, you can solve everything, then you can get everything. But then after you get that, then you ask whether the picture, the result from the soluble limit is typical or not,
or in a sense, is it stable or not? So here you say that, you say you have first order phase transition when mu over jz equal to odd integer, when jxy equal to zero. That's true. But if jx is not equal to zero, but small, do you still have this first order phase transition? Or maybe first order phase transition is totally gone, is this became a smear totally. Or maybe something else happens. I don't know what's happened. So this is what we try to figure out. What's going on, at this transition? So basically, the issue became whether this first order phase transition is stable or not. And so that's something you have to keep in mind. In many situations, people study exactly models and obtain some results. And it's always worthwhile to examine whether those results from exacerbable model is stable against some typical perturbation to the exacerbable model or not. If those results are stable against some typical perturbation, then you can make a prediction and say, yeah, typically we do have this behavior. Yeah. So right now that's what they try to do. In the exacerbable model, we get the first order phase transition. So next question, we want to examine whether this first order phase transition survive a small perturbation or not. That is the question. Okay. Yes?
So in this case, we have an infinite number of phase transitions. Isn't that a bit weird, or is that not that weird?
Not weird, yes. Actually, when you're changing this parameter, you keep having transitions. Indeed, actually, this system didn't have that behavior. Okay. So let's examine the situation where mu equal to zero. Okay, mu equal to zero is very simple. For mu equal to zero, the Quang state simply is m equal to zero. Mu equal to zero, Quang state m equal to zero. The energy equal to zero. So what is the first excited state? The first excited state is that m equal to zero everywhere except at the one side m equal to plus 1 or minus 1. In that case, it will cause energy j. The plus or minus one both cause energy j. So we have a two excitation here with energy jz, where it corresponds to on a single side, m equal to plus 1 or minus 1. And on every other side, m equal to 0. Okay. Then if you change, if mu not equal to 0, if you make mu slightly non-zero, then it's a plus one, it's a mi equal to plus one minus one would behave differently because they couple linearly to this term. So one energy increases, another energy decreases. So this energy, two energy, original degenerate in a sense of split. So this is the excitation energy. And then when you increase mu further, they will reach zero at when mu over j to 1. And this reminds us this picture. When mu to 0, we are deep enough in one phase, so we just end the gap. When you're approaching mu over jz equal to 1, the energy gap close to 0. And that's where we have a phase transition. That's where we have a singularity. Again, we see that the appearance of gapless excitation and the phase transition are linked. Okay. So if you go on, we get this picture. And those segments, they are one phase. This is another phase. So the phase I, the phase 2, and the phase 3, and etc. Then, at right at phase transition, we have those excitations corresponding with the flipping of M. Okay. So I will stop here. In next class, we will study the flipping of the M's and try to understand, can this phase transition point survive a non-zero of the x1? So that is a question for us. Next. Okay. I think we'll have what? How many minutes break?
Let's see. 15 minutes.
15 minutes. Okay, we have 15 minutes break.